Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council audio podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks so much for joining us today. We have a special treat. We're going to talk with Morgan Tweet. Morgan is the COO and co-founder of IND Hemp, and you can find them at indhemp.com. They're a family-owned hemp grain and fiber company. They house the largest processing facility in the United States. They're based in Fort Benton, Montana. Morgan, how you doing this afternoon?
I'm good. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for being on. Now, we've had Morgan on before, so it's always a treat to get her on, kind of get some updates here and find out what's going on in your neck of the woods. How are things out in Montana at the moment, by the way?
It's really good. We've actually had a pretty wet spring, and it's much of a reprieve because we've had two really bad drought years. So this is probably the greenest I've seen our state this time of year in a while. So it's been nice. Good spring.
Oh, fantastic. We're a little dry here in the Midwest in Indiana, but it's good to hear that you guys are doing well weather-wise out there. So, but let's get to it, Morgan. At last time we talked about the, of course, poultry, cattle, goats, the research you guys are doing. Let's start with that. How is that research going with hemp feed for animals?
Great. So we work really closely with the Hemp Feed Coalition. And so there's been a poultry submission for laying hens that was done with the research partners that we did with Kreider and Wanger, both companies out of Pennsylvania. So that work was actually completed in 2020. And then they did a supplemental study again in 2022 to address some of FDA CVM's concerns. So we submitted our quote unquote final answers back to FDA in January. Mm-hmm. We're actually hoping to hear back from them within the next week or so. They have about 180-day timeline from whenever we respond to get us any response back. So the 180 days is closing in. So there is actually a clock on the Hemp Feed Coalition website if anyone's interested to kind of get, you know, a heads up of when we're supposed to be hearing responses. So that's specifically around laying hens and the inclusion of hemp seed meal as a viable feed product for that species. Mm-hmm. And then we also had a study that was completed at CSU for lambs. And similarly, you know, we're looking at hemp seed meal as a good protein supplement. That study was completed a while ago. We're still waiting on some test results to look at the residual cannabinoids that may be in the tissue and the blood and the plasma from those lambs. We don't expect to see anything, but it's a very specialized testing method, and mm-hmm. there's very few labs that can do it. So we are partnering with Kansas State University, and just they've been a little backlogged. So we're waiting for those results. But as soon as that's complete, the lead researcher, Dr. Sean Archbeck at Colorado State University, should have that published. And yeah, we're looking forward to having some more, you know, public and peer-reviewed journal entries that we can all reference coming up.
So. And are you getting any pushback? Are there maybe from the general public or any sort of agencies, anybody that's looking at this as a negative, or is it rolling through as you would hope it would?
No, unfortunately, it's not that it's a negative. I think that they're just like, really, their hands are tied to the system and to the pathway that is allowed for approvals. Mm-hmm. And there's, quite frankly, you know, companies, unfortunately, in states that have taken pretty hard stances of like, you know, hey, they got to play by the book and this is how the book is written. Mm-hmm. And so from a consumer level, there's been states that have sent cease and desist letters, feed regulators who have identified products on the market today that have some of these hemp ingredients included that they, you know, are not approved by AFCO, and so that they're pulling them off of the market. So that's unfortunate, you know, but there are states also that are being really proactive, and you see policy being written, Montana being one of them, and a few more that have come online in the last couple of years that allow for hemp in targeted species. You know, we see the non-production animals, right? So your dogs, your cats, your horses, because there is no risk, right, of that cross-contamination that mm-hmm. we know, and the science, you know, continues to point to no contamination in the byproducts, so the meat, milk, or eggs. But unfortunately, like I said, there's some just really by the book individuals out there that want us to prove that out and to have the science there. So I don't say they're negative about it by mm-hmm. any means, and they really don't even have necessarily concerns. I think, you know, I've had several conversations with individuals within FDA, CVM, and other just, you know, academics and whatnot. And so the concern really isn't there, but like I said, it's just we gotta prove it and we gotta play by the rules.
Well, maybe that wasn't the the blowback wasn't the best term. Maybe misconceptions. Are there misconceptions out there by both regulators and the general public on on hemp feed for animals?
The general public is a little bit of a crapshoot, to be quite honest. You get people who still think like, oh my gosh, is my cow going to get high off of this? And we do have to continue to educate. And I think that that's just part of being in this industry. It's an opportunity we have to educate people. But I do think there's also more people in the general public who understand the value and the nutrition that's available there, and would get really excited about hemp coming on as a feed ingredient. So that's exciting and encouraging to see more and more people, even from the feed industries and the livestock industries, they're excited about hemp coming on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And then general misconceptions. I think regulators, unfortunately, we still have people in policy and people in pretty high levels of staff that still don't understand that hemp can be grown as a true commodity and a true row crop. I had a conversation with a staffer in a senator's office not too long ago who didn't believe us when we said that you could plant hemp with a regular air drill or harvest it with a combine. They thought it was all, hand-picked and rogued and, the model that we see for more floral hemp. So there's definitely still misconceptions on the different types of production styles, mm-hmm. which ultimately leads to misconceptions and misunderstandings in the animal feed side as well.
All right. Now, the Hemp Feed Coalition, you guys were able to get, and of course, the Midwest Hemp Council, part of the Hemp Feed Coalition board there, but you guys were able to get some bills filed in the House and the Senate that were hopefully to ease some of the burden on grain and fiber producers. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so that actually was not the Hemp Feed Coalition. The Hemp Feed Coalition has been working on policy. We've been looking for sponsors and for champions for language specifically to target those non-production animals. So just like we did in Montana here, there is a pathway for us to say, hey, we believe that this, this crop and this ingredient, should have been grandfathered in.
Yeah.
And we understand that there's a risk or concerns around production animals. Let's carve out this market opportunity for non-production animals. So that's what HFC has done. And you're absolutely right. Midwest Hemp Council has done a great job. And, Justin Swanson has been a phenomenal board member for us. But on the other side of that token, so when I take my HFC hat off and put on my IND hemp hat, we have been working really hard on the Industrial Hemp Act of 2023. So we have two bills that have been introduced, companion bills, one in the Senate with Senator Tester and Senator Braun out of Indiana, which is great to see the Midwest step up there. And then also on the House side, Congressman Rosendale and Congressman Houlihan out of Pennsylvania introduced the exact same bill, the Industrial Hemp Act of 2023, and you hit the nail on the head. We're trying to just reduce burdens at the farm level for grain and fiber production, because that misconception and the subsequent challenges that come with having floral and non-floral production sort of spoken in the same language is really burdensome at the farm level. These guys are being subjugated to background checks. They have really high application fees. They're still required to go through sampling processes that are just cumbersome. And if you know a farmer, they're not people that generally have a lot of time when they're farming, right?
Right.
And so they don't have time to do this paperwork. They don't have time to worry about someone coming out and sampling their field. If the weather's good, if they have a window of opportunity to do something on the field, they're going to take their shot at it, and they're not going to be held back by someone in an office saying, you got to wait for me to give you the okay. Doesn't bode well in the agricultural community.
right, of course. So what are you seeing as some of the biggest hurdles for the hemp grain and fiber markets out there?
The markets are for the producers.
Just the marketplace. I mean, what would you do to expand the marketplace? What can be done? What kind of hurdles do we have out there?
Yeah, that's, I think everyone has a little bit different opinion, but that's great, to all of us kind of come together. The market is for sure ample, and we get a lot of interest. I think the reality is as processors and suppliers to the market, we're inconsistent and have not done a great job of delivering products that are either in spec or at consistency or even in the price range, right? Mm-hmm. So we're just, we're young as an industry. And so as suppliers, we are really challenged with high overhead costs. You know, our cost of goods are not competitive compared to like other, you know, incumbent materials, whether that be wood or, you know, flaxseed or canola or whatever it is. We just don't have those economies of scale in our favor to be competitive. So we're having to be creative. There are definitely lots of opportunities for hemp to play in multiple sectors, which is, I think, what get people so excited is like there's enough room for all of us to play in. I think we're finding that some processors, ourselves included, are really narrowing in on like where do we fit and like how can we utilize our strengths as businesses to target specific markets, whether that's, you know, because of where you're geographically located, whether that's because of the technology that you've utilized and the products that you're, you know, putting on the market, or your team and like what do they come? Like, do they have a background in food? Do they have a background in composites, right? So I think we're continuing to find as suppliers where we are honing in on, and that will definitely encourage the market to grow as we see more suppliers be successful.
And Morgan, a lot of your job is education, educating people, giving them information, trying to, you know, help them see the light. But so I imagine, you know, one of the main things that you have to constantly push out there are the primary benefits of hemp for agriculture. For instance, why do we need to now, after all these years, introduce hemp into agriculture? How do you respond to that? And kind of where do you take them from there? Like, why do we need this in? Why do we need this new product, this new item?
Yeah, it's kind of a multi-stage approach, right? We're going to combat it on a couple different angles. The producers, quite frankly, are one of our hardest clients right now. You know, they're a customer in their own right. And the boom that we had back in 2019 and 2020, like, really put a black eye on our industry at the farm level. And they're skeptical. There's a bad stigma with us. And so like, we have a lot to overcome from, unfortunately, those decisions that were made and just how the growth of the market grew on the floral side. Mm-hmm. So for grain and fiber, you know, that's probably the biggest thing for us, you know, in first initial conversations. And then we have to provide value, right? What does hemp do for them on their farm economics and their operation? And there's definitely lots of bullet points that hemp hits on, right? We see a value to the rotation, you know, similar to other oil seeds, we see bumps in their following crop. I think that's a combination of what the root structure is doing and how it's just changing up, you know, the soil chemistry and just the environment. So what's happening there, it has different nutrient uptake values, right? And so we're seeing changes in that. We've seen reduction in some cases for nutrition. We've seen reduction in some cases for irrigation. But in others, we've seen uptakes of that, right? Here in Montana, we've had two really dry years. And so we've almost had to exclusively like work with irrigated farmers or farmers in higher rainfall areas, because hemp for sure can grow in drought conditions. It's something that we tout our horn about, you know, lower moisture content needs. But the reality is, if you want to grow a crop that is profitable and is going to produce, you know, a viable good seed head and a large biomass content for fiber, you need moisture to do that. So in the arid climates, like where we're at, you know, the Dakotas and Colorado and Wyoming, probably very similar, you know, we do have to target the right amount of moisture to get a profitable crop. Because at the end of the day, it has to work out for the farmer. And they can be as excited as they want about putting hemp into the rotation, but if they're losing money, they're not going to do it for that many years. So the other approach is, you know, we continue to, you know, beat down doors and create value in the market so that we can continue to keep higher commodity prices for our raw materials. So, you know, COVID in a little bit of a way was a blessing for some of the markets that hemp isn't playing in, animal bedding being one of them. And, you know, by and large, we were importing animal bedding or hemp herd for animal bedding before COVID. And then, you know, prices, you know, continued to increase and it was just not cost competitive to be importing as much as we saw. And so there's a little bit of a bubble right now on the price of what we're seeing hemp herd sold on the market. We all kind of hope that it sticks around. It's been helping all of us in our young, you know, our young ages of as processors to target those higher value prices. And so if we can create a higher value product on the market to the consumer level, then hopefully that trickles down and allows us to continue to pay higher prices for the raw materials and keep it profitable and economical for our farmers.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, Morgan, on a personal level, we're talking agriculture and we're talking policy making. Did you always envision yourself being involved in both, or is the policy making side, you know, the process of how to get laws and things created on both the state and the federal levels? Is that something that you saw yourself getting into, or, well, I mean, was that your main calling, or was agriculture your calling?
Absolutely not. It was not my calling. And I still, you know, it's something I enjoy only because I feel like I get to be a voice for a bunch of people that don't typically have a voice, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's something that I've been blessed to be, you know, exposed to a lot in the few years that hemp has been, you know, really in circulation, and I've had been exposed and learned a lot. And so I feel like I have a pretty level head when it comes to what the industry needs and how we need to grow. And what I've been so kind of shocked about, and what has, you know, continued to motivate me to be really involved on the policy side, is there's just a huge disconnect from like what's actually happening, boots on the ground, you know, businesses starting and failing and farmers starting and failing, mm-hmm, compared to what policy people think is happening. It's giant. There's just a chasm of understanding. And so I really feel motivated that I can take what I've learned and, you know, hopefully continue to get feedback from other processors and other farmers and continue to push forth policy that I think will be the most impactful. Because the reality is we have a really steep climb ahead of us. Like, we've done a lot in the last 4 years, but we still have a lot of work to do, and mm-hmm, policy could really help with that. You know, we could see, you know, more grant money going to the right causes and to the right projects. We could see, you know, I hate to use the word subsidies, but there's opportunities for the USDA to step in to really incentivize farmers or, you know, breeding companies. You know, we don't really have a really robust breeding program here in the United States. So a lot of seed is still being imported from China or Europe or Canada. And so I'd love to see more domestic production happening. And like, these seed companies have really high overhead costs. It's expensive to breed. And so, you know, there's really unique opportunities for USDA and other funds to be targeted. So with the right policy, I think we can get funds directed to the right place. And we haven't even scratched the surface of what hemp can do when we talk about our climate smart goals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a huge emphasis, you know, on both sides of the aisle right now of implementing programs and incentivizing people to really make decisions based on a climate impact. And hemp has a role to play in that. So how can we, you know, work on policy that opens up markets, that's incentivizing farmers, that's reducing burdens, you know, all of those things. And I think that that's why I do it. I definitely am not a politic person, but I will continue to try to stay educated and try to stay, you know, keep my voice heard, because I think it's really necessary.
Well, thankfully, we have folks like you out there, Morgan. And again, we're speaking with Morgan Tweet. Morgan is the COO and co-founder of IND Hemp, and you can find them at indhemp.com. Again, a family-owned hemp grain and fiber company based in Fort Benton, Montana. Again, Morgan, is there anything else that we need to hit on here that we've not hit on?
No, it's 2023 has been an exciting year, and we see more processors coming online and more farmers, you know, getting their feet wet. And I think we're taking a more measured approach to growing the industry, which is fantastic to see. I think we have more responsible and mission aligned companies. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're all motivated by pretty similar capacities. And so that's pretty encouraging to see that we have the right people continuing to, you know, fight the good fight. And I'm excited to see what, you know, the rest of the year will be. And looks like we've got some good harvest ahead of us. So that's also encouraging. And hopefully the rest of the country is seeing some good stands as well.
Awesome. Well, we're going to bring you back and talk more about that in the future, Morgan.
Great. Thank you so much. Can't wait.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Audio Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks again to Morgan Tweet, and we will see you on the next one. So long, everybody.